Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome back for another week of Bioactive Live Q&A, where we're trying to connect with the regenerative and bioactive people. Get your questions answered in real time with some people that are smarter than us, even. And this week, we have a really special guest. My name's Mark, of course. I'm here hosting, as usual, MI Beneficials. As always, I have Brian from Rubber Ducky Isopods and Kevin from OK Calyx. The guy we have with us tonight is a true pioneer in the natural farming community. You know, someone who's been sharing knowledge and videos for quite some time, and a guy that not only teaches and preaches about this stuff, but actually travels the world and practices this stuff, rolls his sleeves up and teaches farmers around the world how to do this. And it's really is an honor to have you here tonight. So with no further ado, welcome to the show, Chris Trump.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
You guys, and Q&A is a fun format for hearing what people really want to know. And love hanging out doing this. So thanks for having me.
And this is also a father of five, right, Chris?
That is true.
So he's standing right now at a soccer game for his oldest son, that you can tell where the priorities are. We're all fathers here. And, you know, Friday at 9 o'clock on the East Coast translates to 7 or 6 o'clock where you're at, Chris. So, you know, you're a guy that for a lot of the people watching this show, right, probably right now, and people that will be listening to this, you're a guy that probably influenced people to, you know, start thinking more naturally, more organic. And so my question to you is, where did you get your inspiration? A lot of us got it from you and people like you that are bringing this information to light, but where did you get it from?
That's a great question. I had what I consider the great privilege of, growing up with some farming. So I grew up, we farmed cattle and sheep, pigs and chickens. We tried our hand at eggplant and pineapple. You know, my dad was doing all that as I grew up. I got to have my hands in the dirt and spray down the pig pen and get covered in mud. I got to learn from some Hawaiian cowboys how to castrate and brand and rope. I'm really grateful for that. Not a lot of people get to live farm life. I got to live farm life. And in that journey, my dad was a first generation farmer, so he asked questions and valued people with more knowledge than him. He didn't have a whole lot of pride or ego in that. He was pretty much a learner while I was growing up, and he always would invite me into that conversation. If there was an expert kicking tires and talking about our nutrition in our trees. 30 years ago, we started farming macadamia nuts. So yeah, there was people more knowledgeable than us. He invited me into those conversations. And a lot of it didn't make sense when I was a kid. You know, I wasn't hyper interested in, you know, every conversation, but some of it sunk in. I think it was really getting to be in some of those conversations and hear about how important some of these details were. You know, as a kid, you don't think about the details of nutrition, but then you have two adults, you know, spending a lot of time and energy talking about it. And, oh, wow, I guess this is important. Maybe the foundation for me that there was a lot of questions. There's a lot of things to know. And then later, I got to study. One of my professors, I would say, was a big influence. The biggest influence, though, by far, was after college. I decided I wasn't interested. I was designing clothes. I dressed Bill Murray and Leon Panetta, and it was like a ultra high end fashion thing. I was like, this isn't for me. And I went back and I started helping my dad manage the farm. And that point when, wow, it's not working, or this is, you know, we got this issue. That's when I needed answers, and it was necessity was the mother of learning. In that I had to know things that I didn't know, and I had a lot of grace in that. I had some pretty cool opportunities as I'm asking the question. So I can talk more about that, but I just...
How did the professor influence you, Chris? How did the professor influence you?
You know, it was a wild, interesting journey where we looked. I mean, it was like looking with a telescope, you know, at the stars, but we were looking backwards 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years. At the tidbits of agricultural information we found in the oldest of literature, or hints from Egypt, or, you know, all these crazy tidbits, and looking into history at the agricultural world, but also most specifically the microbiological world. And that I got to look at things that were true 3,000, 4,000 years ago, and evidence of microbiological understanding and or influence on human life, just like it has now, and how central that is to the human experience and to nature. And realizing that no matter who you are, Native American walking the coasts of California, you know, pre-Spaniard influence, or Hebrew people wandering in the desert by Sinai, microbiology and the life going on in the soil and all around us is a huge part of your life, your gut included. So it did kind of created a bedrock of importance for me, looking at agriculture, and realizing that for many, many generations, everything farmers did was in some part had to do with tending to the life of the soil. And then how we departed from that. All of a sudden, we don't have that as the core action. You know, a lot of historical practices, things we did three generations ago, everything the farmer was doing was tending to the life of the soil. And then all of a sudden, that stopped. And so I, ended up being a big kind of loud void in the whole of agriculture. We were a conventional farm for the most part when I started, and there was this big void. Like, we don't do any of this anymore, and I wouldn't have had that understanding that there was a blank space. We call it in art, you call it the negative space. You know, it's this huge important aspect of any painting or rendering is the negative space. And the negative space for me became, well, what are the microbes doing? And so I'm asking this, looking at crop diversification for our farm because macadamia nut wasn't going so well. Our trees were suffering, and designed commercial aquaponics. And anybody that's played with and built a commercial aquaponics, anybody that's played with that knows that it lives and dies on microbes. And so I started getting that kind of everyday being confronted with, you know, the impact of, you know, the balance and what's happening microbially. And then, and then about that time I got to learn from Master Cho and Elaine Ingham, you know, within 1 year of each other. And that was kind of the linchpin for me. After that, you couldn't tell me that that wasn't the most important thing.
And, you know, it's, you know, what are the microbes doing? And what, like, one of the most fascinating things that I've heard recently was a conversation between you and Matt Powers about IPMO. And it just to introduce what that is, I might say this wrong, but it's indigenous predatory microorganisms, correct?
Yeah. Correct. Okay. And then it also, I like that at the same time, it plays on IPM or integrated.
Yes.
Management. Yeah.
Yes. So just because I will never be able to explain it as well as you, can you run us through like how you discovered IPMO and how you effectively used it? Like, I know you used it in Africa through that conversation, or Zimbabwe. Uh-huh. So can you walk us through IPMO?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you know, I always talk. Brian studied with me. We did time in microbes some years back, and I always he might remember. I'm always talking about. The definition of science, because I think it's important here, because it's how I learned about IPMO. And so the definition of science is the study of nature through observation and experimentation. So nothing science learns isn't already law or principles on how the world works, really. We can apply neat inventions, but ultimately we're still at the mercy of the laws that we're just looking at. We're finding out more about. That's what science is. We're studying how it all works. And farming, and the reason some of these historical practices around the world are so effective for farming is. Because farmers and farming is such a deep look into our environment. We're paying such close attention to what's happening around us. And so I was making IMO for our farm, which I was doing very regularly. At that time, we were in a whole system where we, you know, sprayed liquid IMO all the time. And so I'm using up my materials. Liquid IMO is taking IMO and brewing it in a actively aerated manner. And I was running out, so I had to make some more. I went to my feedstock, my material that I was making it on, and it had a bunch of weevils in it, which I was like, oh no, it's gone bad. But I'm like, you know what? It's going to take me 2 weeks to get more of this material. I need it now. How bad really are weevils? So I was like, whatever, made my IMO. I had all this IMO2 from the mountains, all these different places, a bunch of different inoculum. And then I had this material full of weevils, rice bran and macadamia nut shell and kernel. And so I started making it. Everything's going as I would expect normally happens. Bunch of fungi is produced, but there was something interesting in that there was a fungi of a different color blooming in a perfect sphere, these little puffballs throughout the process. And I was like, that's interesting. Never seen that before. Start looking at it, poking at it, you know, observing, And at the center of each puffball is a weevil. So it's like, huh, super interesting. Really busy. I'm managing our farm. I have a lot on my plate. And so I didn't stop. I just said, that's cool. Went on, made liquid IMO, sprayed it on 20 acres, you know. And the next day I'm out there as a good farmer. I'm observing how my plants reacted to my spray. This is really important, basic farming. But I get out there, and on the tree, in the nook of a tree, is one of those little white puffballs that I was seeing in my IMO3. And for me, at that moment, I was like, oh. And I had, you know, a week-long deep dive into research on who are the predators of beetles and how does this all work. And what I learned about what had happened is I had somehow, in my IMO2 collecting, ended up with, or on the weevils themselves in their environment, I had ended up with a predatory fungi, a fungi that eats the chitin or the exoskeleton of those beetles. Weevil is a little beetle, and the green stink bug that I saw in my tree covered in fungi was also a beetle. And so there's these predatory fungi that eat that specific protein made in exoskeletons of creatures. And I had created or cultivated an environment where they could multiply. And then in spraying them out over 20 acres, I had now inoculated my orchard with this beneficial, for me, microbial community. And so I was pretty stoked, and at the same time I'm like, well, I don't have to do anything. There was nothing more for me to do to make use of this technology. I had a 200 pounds of it ready to go into tea and go out on my farm. I'm like, I'm good, that's great. We have passively created a pressure on our prime our prime pest for our crop. Our crop, macadamia nuts, the premier or worst crop or pest we've ever had, has been green stink bug. We had almost were out of business years ago, before I was managing with, I was off at school. We had an 80% crop failure due to stink bug. So to have this thing we're already doing that's creating drastic change in the health of our trees and really helping our farm be able to afford enough nutrition to make this all work. At the same time, without spending a dollar more, I am now creating or having passive pressure on my pests. I was stoked. So I put that away in my pocket, and I didn't pull it out again until my friend Steve Reisner had a problem in Zimbabwe with locusts. They were the whole farm. He was on like a 700-acre farm, and he was running a 100-acre hemp project. And he's like, hey, this year the grasshoppers are killing everything. The farm, edge of the farm is starting to get devastated. We're going to get wiped out. Do you have anything for this? And I said, well, no, nothing I learned from Master Cho, but this one thing did happen. And I talked him through it. He did it, and he had 100% kill. Every farm around him on his project got devastated with locusts. His hemp project had zero problems. And he had observable, predation by fungi in this project. So he's now trialed it in a bunch of different places in the world. I've played with it a bunch of different places, and it's become pretty much standard operating procedure for a bunch of these canna farmers, as well as, it's easy. And so, yeah, I can tell you how we do it now. It's a little different than how I first did it, but yeah.
Yeah, how do you do it now?
So we, I just take the insects. Ideally, if you can get your pest, that's best. So your local things you're dealing with, that's the primo that you can use. But you can use insect frass. I mean, I bet Brian's got some byproduct from his stuff over there making isopods that you could use. But you can use insect kind of leavings from insect production. And you put it in the rice when you put the rice out in the forest so that those predatory insect fungi have something to eat in the rice. And so we do that. And then you can also add insect frass to the IMO3 stage. So just some, and you don't need a lot. What you can do, what people do is they overload and it creates this really nasty, super nitrogen rich material, because insect frass has a lot of proteins in it too from the pieces of the bodies of the insects. So you don't less is more in this context. You don't need a ton of that material because you don't want to turn it into some, you know, super high nitrogen stinky kind of manure material. That would be that would hinder everything. So a light dose of carapace for a food source for that one part of the whole ecosystem, and really that's what it is. We're just increasing diversity by increasing bringing in the food source of one other type of fungi. It's a beautiful night.
So ideally you're grabbing literal live pests from your plants in your region, and then you're putting them into that inoculation. And I don't know if people are grasping the magnitude of what he's saying, because there's a lot of pests out there that there is no answer to, and then there's like a vacuum of information even online where you're not going to do a quick search on how to handle grasshoppers or locusts and find this information. This is truly something that he basically stumbled upon.
And nature taught me. Yeah. It's wild crafting your natural pesticide. It doesn't hurt your ecosystem. If it's indigenous, it's already there. You're not introducing something weird. It doesn't even hurt bees. The same day I can have bees all over the flowers I've just sprayed and they won't get hurt. However, if you are concerned about your bees, spray when they're asleep, when they're staying in their hive, because if you blast bees directly with IPMO, you will kill them. So if you have like a liquid foliar and you just blast them full on, you can get them so coated that they can't clean themselves and they can get predated or eaten by fungi, because they have carapace too.
So Lisa McCarville,
are they alive or dead? Does it matter?
Say it again.
So the bugs that you choose dead. To add, dead.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, you add them dead. I mean, they can be alive when you collect them, but you don't. They'll crawl out of the rice cooker if you're not careful.
Have you is there a limitation on this that you found, or is it really pretty much like as long as it's pest specific, like IPMO.
So there is a limitation. The limitation is if you don't actually collect any predatory fungi, it doesn't work. And that sounds kind of silly for me to even say, but you kind of need to notice bloom on the carapace in your rice. You kind of need to see that there's something happened there. And tends to look slightly different than the other IMO. Because you put out rice with insects doesn't mean that you have collected predatory microbes. There's no, just because you put out rice doesn't mean you get a bunch of fungi that grows in it. So it is, the happy magic of, you need that two things to come together. You've put out the food source, and you need that fungi actually was in the forest there where you placed your collection box and you found some. One of the ways to counteract this variable is to put out 12 boxes. That's what I do. If I'm going to put out IMO, I know some of them are going to fail. So instead of putting out one box, having it fail three times, and now I've gone 4 weeks of trials, I put out 12 boxes and I get at least three every time. Usually I get a lot more than that, but for anybody starting out, get a bunch of boxes out there because it'll just increase your chances. This is the hardest part. Once you have it on the shelf, you can have it for 3, 4, 5, 6 years on the shelf, a spoonful to inoculate your small grow, or a handful to make a few hundred pounds for a big farm.
Kevin, you want to go through some of your questions?
Sorry, have you used anything besides rice?
It's a great question. Game just ended. Gonna jump in the car with the teenager. Good game, dude. Yeah, scored on a couple times.
Yeah, first one I was okay with. Second one I should have saved.
Yeah, you did great. This is my son Judah.
Hey,
what's up, Judah?
I'm on a live Q&A for work, so yeah. You want me to drive? Yeah, that'd be great. Judah's gonna drive, so I'm staying with you guys. Bring me back to the question. So sorry.
Have you ever used anything besides rice for these collections?
Yeah. So I think this is an area that needs to be studied. It's something that I'm in pursuit of. What I mean, because IPMO is the introduction of an additional food source, right? And we've had, and because of that, really amazing results in cultivating another type of fungi. So bringing in additional food sources beyond rice could have a real impact. However, to pursue this tech and not use rice, I think is kind of the pinnacle of hubris. People bring their good ideas. I'm going to improve this process. I'm going to bring in something, you know, people say more indigenous, like, you know, the reality there is that rice has a very specific benefit and purpose. Rice is extremely high in fat and protein. Lots of scientists don't know this, but fats are fungal foods. The leading food source, the thing that they want most, are the fats. They break apart the cell walls in lignin-rich material, and the fats are...
He just connected to the car.
No, you're muted.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
It's a delay.
Sorry about that. So
fatties and rice.
Yeah, so fatty acids, right? We fatty acids are lipids and complex acids. The fungi deconstruct those fatty acids, use the lipids, and then reconstruct the acids into humic and fulvic compounds, right? This isn't like common. You're not getting taught this at school, unless you're going to like some of these cutting edge kind of cool fungi guy schools. So what other grain has a fat protein profile like rice? It's nothing. nothing you can get easily anyway. And so there are other things you could use, absolutely, but nothing is as available or as dialed to their preferences as white rice. White rice has been bleach scarified or damaged, so it is even more available. We're trying to jumpstart growth. And then, we don't know enough to... We don't know enough to cultivate additional diversity using other materials. So if we can get into that, like, research, that would be amazing. You know, I really, really hope that I can get into the research of looking into what percent add of what could create a higher diversity in my inoculum. But anybody that's saying they know that right now, I'd say show me the data. Right now, the data is that rice works really well all over the world, and also works really well with IPMO. I don't have that level of data for any other material. So you're off in a fringe with a hope and a prayer, is my opinion on using something else.
So one other quick question just on the IPMO before we jump into community questions here. Have you, because I know on like the West Coast there's a lot of issues with spider mites and fruit orchards and stuff like that. Have you successfully implemented this on in those settings for that kind of pest?
Yeah, absolutely.
Same principle?
Same principle. Spider mites, I would say you don't even need IPMO. Just IMO, liquid IMO, is enough there. And it's a weekly foliar, is what you, is the kind of SOP there. And it's abundant plant health that outcompetes or makes the cell walls too rich in protein for pests.
For those leaf suckers.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great information. Yeah, we had I worked with a farm in Colorado. They're crushing it right now. They're 4 years into it, three years into it. They had a shared wall, one of those flimsy plastic, like white kind of high-low walls. I forget what that material is called, but it had screw holes and everything in it. It was definitely not a secure barrier. And their neighbor was like, was infested with spider mites on the regular, like something you'd see out of like a horror movie, you know, like the music starts playing. It was, whoa. So that was their wall. Spider mites were present, but they never had damage and they never had an infestation. So spider mites kept coming through, but you never saw spider mites in the canopy. So it was, it was a wild place to run a really brand new to me at that time, kind of living soil, natural farming only trial, was in a shared wall with a established salt, you know, cloth pot, throw everything away every cycle and get wild infestations. They managed without, getting taken over. So it was, still is really good and still have that neighbor. So
that's amazing. The power of microbiology.
Yeah. Health, plant health is really the leading factor there, I think.
So yeah, Brian, let's get into some questions, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. And, for people that kind of want a, especially science-driven, if you will, in kind of a metaphoric way. In 2019, When I came to Idaho to see you, Chris, I probably had maybe 10K in my pocket, like total. I think everything said and done was about 3K. So when I got there and everything, this information was a little bit over my head. And so to this day, one of the reasons why I want to do these free education things is because of what yourself, Dr. Lane Ingham, Jeff Lowenfels, you kind of guys are on that Mount Rushmore for a lot of us out there that have learned this. But I've been able to take that and monetize it in my own little way. And that's what we've always been trying to find and teach other people is there's some kind of niche for these skill sets. And so if you just kind of build up your armor and you get better at a variety of different skill sets, then you can find that certain rabbit hole that you want to kind of go down and then, you know, make a nice little living for yourself. And I think these skill sets go a lot further than just like the cannabis farmers kind of I don't know the right word there. We almost take for granted that the information that we have compared to even some of the more elite flower, like plant farmers, food farmers, that kind of stuff. And then in the reptile space, it's a whole new world over there. So just wanted to put it out there that in the early days, man, there wasn't too many that were teaching this, and you were one of those that were. All right. So first one is to Lisa. She reached out. She definitely wanted to even know about the IPMO, which is extremely popular, especially with Mr. Powers. Will it work on dead pests too? That's what she was talking about.
Will it work on dead pests too? Yes. So I think what she's asking is, can I use the dead carcasses of my material to make IMO with, or of my pest to make IMO with? Absolutely, Lisa. You can use the dead carcasses, collect all of them. You can also look up some really simple like sweet wine or beer traps for a lot of pests. There's really simple things where you put a little dish or a bottle, 2 liter with a hole in it of some beer or rice wine, and the pests will go in and they'll try and drink from that sweet ferment and then drown, and you can just strain that out and you have a bunch of your dead pests.
Excellent.
That was
awesome. Yeah. Next one, shout out to Rick. If using plants to detoxify soil, what's best use for the plant matter afterwards?
Good question. And, I'm of the opinion, sorry, it's a great question. And I think using plants to detoxify soil is a common practice. I think what is far better to detoxify soil is to increase the total fungi in your soil. Get those fungi numbers up, use IMO, use fungal foods, spray humic acid and bring in, wood chips and just create fungal environments, and you can sequester a ton of the toxins in fungal bodies. They will bring it into their bodies and hold it, and so it becomes non-plant available. So then you can use whatever that plant is you're using for detoxification and test that leaf, and you might be getting no uptake because of the fungi. This is ongoing to be researched, some really great data so far on how fast fungi can sequester heavy metals and other toxins in their environment. A good thing to do with the plant material, you can stockpile it and do static composting. It really depends on how toxic the plants are. If the plants have taken up everything and it seems really gnarly, then that might be something to go stick in some long-term pile. 10 years from now, if you expand your farm this far, then you'll get to this pile over here and should be broken down. Depends what you're sequestering to, what the half-life is, how long it lasts. Sorry, that's a big question with a few variables. If it has sequestered a ton of toxins, then you want to beware of using it at all in compost or on your farm. If it was really effective at picking up a bunch of nasty stuff, then the best is the trash removal services. You know, get it in a bin and get it to the dump. Where it can sit there with plastics and break down over, 100 years.
Excellent answer.
Sorry, I don't have a better answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and next week we have Quatama Kavia coming on. He's a soil remediation guy, and he uses heavily paramagnetic bokashi and paramagnetic biochar and bokashi. So. We can get deeper into that next week too, for sure.
Yeah, the best is fungi. You want to sequester junk, get the fungi going.
Next question is from Old Time Rock and Roll. What inputs would you recommend for a small home grower to make with 4 to 8 plants growing in a city without resources to go full KNF or Jadam? Using living soil in a small bed and 10 to 20 gallon, I would imagine, fabric pots.
I would highly recommend, if you can just feed your soil with some basic compost, so top dress, you can make it in your house even, or garage. So, that video I have on how to make a worm bin, I called it Trump Tower, is great. If you just, or even bokashi, some of your food scraps, that would be great. And then I would recommend Maintenance Solution and FAA and WCA, all really easy to make. I sell them on my website. I think my stock is low right now on some things, but Maintenance Solution is OHN, FPJ, and brown rice vinegar, and it's something you can use every week. And it's just going to help your total production, total plant health. Think of it as your daily vitamin plus snacks for your plants. They're going to be fed enough. They can live off of Maintenance Solution weekly, even if the soil's missing a little bit. So, and then if you want to boost yield, you use fish amino acid in veg. And calcium is in flour. You can use a little fish amino acid if you need, but not too far into flour, just because of the oils. You don't want them mingling. So those are pretty easy. You can buy them from a local KNF-er, and it's really just something that goes in a spray bottle. And you can spritz your plants once a week. Other than that, some sort of soil conditioner. So you want some life in there. If you can't do anything, you could do JMS. Anybody can do JMS. It's easy enough. It doesn't have much fungi. So if you can top dress with some leaf litter or something, that'd be great. Good question.
All right, next one is from David. Have you ever used predator insects?
I have used predatory insects. Same that giant grow down in Colorado. It was kind of, we saw all the bugs next door and we went all out with predatory insects. I think there is a huge benefit to that, or there can be, provided you use the right insects. Suzanne Wainwright is a great resource for what are the right insects for your scenario. I just caution the use of any one thing too much. Like ladybugs, for example, are great, but they will go ballistic in a good environment and grow like crazy. And now your problem is that you have a bunch of ladybug insect parts all in your flower. It's just covered in broken down dead insects. And so now, even though they're beneficial, their dead bodies on your flower is not beneficial. So just, caution on using too much.
This one's from Stonemason. You could keep making your IMO1 collections from the IMO3 after you get the bug-eating fungi like Kevin does.
You might not know exactly what Kevin does.
I don't know what Kevin does, but I understand the question. Just be expecting diminishing returns if you're doing that. Be expecting your effect to go down. It's similar to the copy machine. Maybe that's an old analogy. The original, it's like memes, you know, the original meaning of the first meme, now that it's been reused 500 times, half of the people don't even know what the original meme was even for, you know. This can happen where the fungi you're cultivating, you lose aspects of that community in that inoculum. They don't transfer that next time. So now you have maybe some of that original fungi, but you don't have the 17 bacteria and the, you know, archaea that goes with it that was making it all work for you. And now you're not seeing the same effect. That wild indigenous culture, that IMO1 culture, IMO2 on the shelf is one generation removed from wild. It's pretty amazing. But if you start making IMO1 off of the IMO3 from the IMO2, it diminishes in value over time. So not a best practice, but definitely convenient in a pinch.
Yeah, so the practice of that, to explain it, is that in the wintertime, I'm showing people, like in Oklahoma, where it's difficult to get an IMO collection, you know, during December, January, February, March, stuff like that, is to be able to do it indoors in a tote, put rice on your IMO3. You'll gather a collection, you can continue, but of course, always gathering new material from around my place and facilities, and, you know, always make a new IMO1 from that. But you can't, and it's just a way to make new IMO1. You can do it on your IMO3. You know, it's a way to kind of keep the process going during the cold days here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, great thing to get you through in a pinch, to get you some more material, be expecting the potential for diminishing return.
Grapinator, would taking dead bugs that have mycelium on them from inside your windowsill and adding them to an IMO box be useful to collect more fungi? Is there a way to go to IMO2 with enough bugs? He's got that windowsill fun.
Yeah, no. So I love what you're putting down here, Grapinator. Yes, so finding a bug in the wild that's been eaten by a fungi, and the wild can be your windowsill, but finding a bug in the wild that's been eaten by a fungi is the best way with your eyes to find predatory fungi. There's not a better way than finding bugs that have been eaten by fungi or that are being consumed. Then even better would be finding them in the wild and getting a rice collection box there. One of the reasons, let me jump into kind of the reason IMO1 in rice. And so one of the reasons it's so cool is because it's shelf stable. It can sit on the shelf in IMO2 form for years, because there's no plant material in it, and there's no other foreign matter in it that will cause it to go off. If you have a bunch of bugs and you throw them into the rice and they don't ferment with the rice originally, that they can cause it to go sideways or kind of basically start to bubble and go off and turn into alcohol. And so we want to keep our IMO at like wine cellar temperatures if we can, because that shelf stability saves me from having to go get more. and it's really hard without getting it to bloom on rice or with a little bit of insect material on rice. It's hard to get it to be shelf stable. So, and it's hard to multiply. So yes, absolutely. You can collect those, fuzzy bugs that you find. And that is a good sign that you just found a predatory, insect. Go ahead and turn it off.
You guys hear me all right?
Yep, still got you.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, I really like that question. I think there's more to discover there. Also, you can send a bug down to what's that university that's taking bugs from people?
It's not Michigan, is it?
No, it's sorry, it'll come to me in a minute. But yeah, the problem is, so say you have that amazing bloom in your windowsill, Mr. Grapinator. How do you get that to multiply in solution? One of the ways is you could take that handful of bugs and you could put it in a brew bag and make some liquid IMO, make some tea. But otherwise, it's really hard to get enough of that because your bug's this big, right? It's hard to get enough of that to cover everything and create some sort of web of defense. That said, if it's growing in your windowsill, it's probably going to grow in your grow room or at least stay around. And so getting it established even once can leave a lasting benefit of protection.
I'm going to be looking for fuzzy bugs all the time now.
Heck yeah. Send them to me. I'll send you back some IMO with it.
All right, were you talking about the Land Institute down there in Kansas
no.
City?
No.
They were collecting a lot of weird bugs down there when I was. All right, no, Green Table Gardens. If you have already made the wedding agent, can I add herbal extracts such as rosemary, thyme, sage oils I have made, or could I add those oils to my OHN?
Here's, it's not like I am, I'm a huge, proponent of innovation. Sometimes when you want to change the recipe, all you're going to get from your change is a diminishing of the original power. And so Green Table Gardens, I would just caution you, yes, with the wetting agent, you could combine any pesticide or germicide to the wetting agent and it'll cause it to stick to your leaves. Whether or not you want some sage oil sticking to your leaves and being the thing that's sticking around, if that's actually going to help you, thyme oil, I don't know. I couldn't speak to those things. I know that Jadom's pesticidal suite is one of the best natural pesticidal suites in the world. There's not a whole lot that compares. So making herbal solution like they teach, it's a great and effective tool. Their wetting agent, great and effective tool. Thyme oil, to hell if I know. You know, so good luck. You're off in experiment land, and it might kill everything, and it might cause it all to suck. And last bit of your question, definitely don't change the OHN recipe. OHN should never have been changed. I would, if I felt like making another OHN video, take out that turmeric bit. It's not the best thing to add.
Oh, how about that?
The next one is from Mark Nelson. Could you add insect, I think he means obviously, frass to labs? I just made a batch of labs ready to go.
No. No, that they don't. Those don't have anything in common. Labs of bacteria. What we're talking about with IPMO is a fungi. Fungi is not produced in the process for making lab.
I like his the way his brain was thinking there. You know,
you can add spirulina to lab and get purple non sulfur bacteria. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah,
I've been messing around with that lately. That stuff's pretty cool. With like freeze dried peas, throw some crab meal in there. All of a sudden,
yeah. So when you're brewing your labs, that's when you add the weird stuff. Not after you brew it.
All right. Just like a couple more. I know you're busy, sir. Yellow Skunk Farms, who we just had on here. So shout out to him. He's out here kind of coming up with his own stuff, Chris. So I think you've inspired a lot of people, man. I found a lot of other people that kind of wanted, again, their own little niche because cannabis isn't for everybody. And in the early days, it seemed that way. And the reality is you got to have a ton of money to really do it the right way. And it's tough. But to do the soil stuff and that kind of thing, you can usually do that in your own home, basement, that kind of thing. Is there a specific type of rice that works best for IMO collections? I've heard this multiple times.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I believe there is. I have, believe it or not, I have done hundreds of IMO1 collections, and I see a massive increase in the success and effectiveness of putting out a box when you use like a short grain Asian rice. Long grain rice doesn't work. Basmati doesn't work. These are my opinions. Prove me wrong, but there's not a whole lot of people that done as many of those as I have. And I have tried long grain. I have tried all the rices because I land in these places. You know where there's no short grain Asian rice? Ireland. I found it eventually. And the middle of the U.S. People don't eat rice in the middle of the U.S. They have no idea what it's even for. Iowa, go try and find some short grain Asian rice. It's just not there.
I can just imagine.
What, what have you been messing with the labs? What have you been, you've been throwing peas in? Finding some cool things?
Yeah, spirulina. Just kind of playing around with coral calciums. I remember in the early days, man, you were teaching, like, really go with your nose. And so you would, to this day, man, you made the whole, like, class basically come up and smell this, like, disgusting shit. But you never forget that. And so that was something that I really, I guess, took away from that week-long course with you, is that I want to make the stuff that doesn't smell for me and for my wife and my children. It seems to be working out pretty well. And then that's why we have Kevin on the show, because he also dabbles in all this stuff, but he doesn't mind the stinky. And his wife obviously loves him more than my wife does, because she doesn't mind it either. All right. So Kevin has a question for you personally. So I want to leave that for you, Kevin. I want to do this last one here. And then Mark, if you want to kind of behind the scenes, do the get ready for the giveaway part. And then Chris, we could let you go. I know you're super busy, brother. So from I can't even say that one. He's a gentleman from IG. How can I take my plants out of shock after being overgrown as clones?
I really understand like the heart of stuff going wrong and how hard it is when things don't go right, and the loss of money spent and energy. But I find that in life and very much in farming, that when something goes wrong, the energy it takes to try and coax that thing back to right and get then down the road to best is energy that's best spent walking to the trash can and going and getting some new clones.
That is great advice.
Yeah, I would add, because I have fucked up my share of plants in my life, the kelp sprays, the kind of like doing that, and the fulvic acid specifically from BioAg. Obviously, I don't have anything to do with that company, but that is kind of like an ace in the back pocket. There's something special about feeding that. But like Chris said, I think a lot of the time, especially how easy it is to get the plants these days and the genetics these days, you just kind of roll with it and start over.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like you said, Brian, there's definitely things you can do, but I've watched this all happen a bunch of times. I've been able to be around some really great growers, I'm just kind of giving back the experience I have, limited as it is, and the wisdom from some people that I think are pretty good at it. And yeah, you're better off starting over. But Maintenance Solution and FAA, if you're trying to continue that veg to make it nice and pretty.
Kevin, I got your question here. I'm going to pull it up for you.
And then... All right. Chris, I'm going to ask you this question. It's based on a podcast I listened to a while back. And here it is. Based on cleanliness practices found in Leviticus, I was wondering if there are any inputs that use cedar wood. Now, you already dealt with this one. Could cedar bark be used as an OHN ingredient? You said don't change that just a minute ago. But could it be part of an IPM spray?
That's a great, great question. But you got to understand why cedar was used and what. Start trying to add it to other things. Cedar is amazing. And cedar grit is amazing. So in studying the annals of history and how they used microbes and interacted with them, in Levitical law, they got this prescription to use hyssop, which is, I got a posse coming out to get me.
Why?
I'm on a call. Can you all walk away now? Thanks. hyssop was used, it's a plant, so the material of hyssop was used, and cedar grit, kind of the basically sawdust from building with cedar, because they built a bunch with cedar, those combined with running water, this is some 2000 BC, those three things come together to form our current scrub-in practices for our surgeons. We were blacklisting and disbarring, you know, getting rid of doctors for suggesting we wash our hands back in the 1800s. But 2000 BC, these people in the desert on a camping trip are using cedar. And the reason they use cedar is if you're on a camping trip and everything's dirty, cedar is so high in carbon, low in nitrogen, and with a little bit of analgesic oil, I think that's the word, maybe it's the wrong word. But it's gonna have no bacteria on it. Bacteria can do nothing with it. They don't thrive on it. So think of it as a self-sterilizing material. It's a material that stays clean of bacteria, and only the biggest fungi can do stuff with it. And we know the biggest fungi are beneficial. So it's basically a material that even though you're on a camping trip and everything's covered in bacteria, this stuff you scrub your hands with, you're not introducing any more bacteria. So it's really... And so what we do use cedar for is for making our boxes for IMO, because it's this blank slate. It's going to be kind of void of inoculating our rice with anything, even if we didn't clean it the best when we put it away last time. But yeah, I would not add any cedar to any recipes, probably.
Real quick, Chris, I know you're up to some other stuff now. I see you have a different company, you know, it's like 5 years, I guess, since we really spoke like this. What have you been up to and promote?
Yeah, I have come to believe that I don't want to do much of anything alone anymore. So I am slowly, but it takes really more resource and more expertise than I have. So that's the slow bit. Because I am slowly inviting and preparing to invite community-run work. That's the whole vision for BioMay, is that BioMay is a place for people like you, Brian, that know natural farming, want to fill a role or benefit some from a niche in the umbrella. Ultimately, with the goal being that we have a side business that's a nonprofit that takes us overseas to really share this information in developing nations and places where it's going to mean life and death for people, or life for people, really. So, BioMay is in its infancy. The blooming place would be really a place where there's kind of platform for other people to be celebrated in what they can do or bring to the community. And I've taught a lot and tried to raise up teachers. I put a lot of energy into teaching teachers. You've seen that, Brian, that Free Soil Smith. You can come back to the class and co-teach, you know, without cost. I keep running into like people feeling like they got to get really like confrontationally competitive. You know, I don't like stop anybody from teaching. I don't put any like caps on. I mean, you can vouch for that. I tell people go share this information. You know, I'm not the police. I'm not trying to tell people what to do with the information. I really truly believe in it to be something that's shared freely. And I've lost friendships because people feel like they need to be like somehow exclusive or excluding me or get out from under. You know, you're being rude. It's all right there. I just brought it in. I think there's sweatshirts in here. Sorry. My 10-year-old's like trying to get in my face. Like, hey, I'm getting your attention.
No, we really appreciate your time. So we know you got a lot of family there. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just sharing a little of that. That's kind of slowed me down a bit because I'm a sensitive human that has really been affected by just that like weird kind of way that people get. And so, I want more of the community. I want to figure out more of creating place for people that want to participate in spreading this. Like you said, finding their niche. I want to be better at fostering that because I think that's needed. I think people do want to play, and creating a space where everyone can play is something I'm working on. It's just slow because nobody's paying me to do that.
Well, we sure do appreciate your time on the show here, Chris. It's clear that you're a family man. You got family trying to drag you inside the door. Really appreciate this time. And to support this man, please check out biomay.solutions online. A lot of great information, calculators to help you with inputs. He's got actual products on there for sale that you can buy from the man himself.
We'll check it out.
And really just a great human being, Chris. I can't thank you enough for sharing with us about IPMO. Is really super fascinating, and I hope you do know that there are a lot of people out there that are fueled by what you've done in the past. And so, you know, it's not lost although you might be feeling down on it, just know that there is a lot of people out there. I see tons of comments on Instagram, tons of comments here on the show. I know this is a small microcosm. But you really are an inspiration to a lot of people, and someone who has brought new life. I mean, I first started watching you sitting on the couch with a 3-month-old baby at 5 o'clock in the morning because I'm trying to find purpose in, you know, not necessarily growing marijuana, but agriculture and what I'm doing outside in the soil and just listening to people like you truly is, has changed stuff for me. So I hope you know that there's people out there that have found so much value and do, you know, appreciate the mission. So
thanks for that. I appreciate it.
I hope you have a great night, Chris. We'll stick around here and answer a few more questions, guys, before signing off, but we'll let Chris get out of here now. So Brian, you want to start back up on questions?
Chris, appreciate it, brother.
What were we going to say?
Oh, I just appreciate it, man. And I know you were kind of like sharing a lot of stuff. I've seen exactly what you're talking about. And I think a lot of people that have seen you over the years and a lot of people watch the replay of this will know exactly what you're talking about, man. So it didn't fall on deaf ears. You don't have to go into real detail for us to know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, Chris, I could sit here and talk for an hour about how you have changed my life, man. I was in depression and anxiety. Natural farming is one of the things that got me out of that situation. You were part of that also. And so, man, you got to know you've changed people's lives. You changed my life with the teaching that you've given us, the encouragement that you give, the grace that you show. You know, you allow people to make mistakes and encourage people to mess up. Because you get to start again. You get to do it again. No one's holding you to any goals. You just got to keep on trying. So you've changed all of our lives, dude. Go inside and have a good, happy heart and a peaceful mind.
Hey, thank you for that. Really, really means a lot. I can't tell you how much that just that human care. All right. Love you guys. Peace.
Love you too, man. See ya.
Well, that was awesome.
Yeah, and if you're new to what we're doing on this show, just think of whatever you're passionate about, the OG of that, we just had him on the show. And there's other people that I think are OG at that level, but from a KNF standpoint of that little rabbit hole, not necessarily like Dr. Lane Ingham, Jeff Lowenfels, I feel like those are also big mainstream highways. But Chris Trump is also on that mainstream highway in his little niche. And you got to hear from the man himself. There's just a lot to this. And that's why I was saying at the beginning of this, I always want to pass this on to people because this skill set is able to be monetized. And I was sitting there, like I said, when I went to Idaho, man, I putting up basically 30% of your entire net worth, which is embarrassing to even say, was risky. But there's just something to understanding this stuff. And I hope that you guys truly are grateful for what he just gave you for an hour, because I had to pay a lot more to get it. And I think you guys will now, if you're brand new to it, will go down the rabbit hole of his YouTube channel. And then when he kind of explains it in a more basic sense, I promise you what Kevin is saying now will make a lot more sense to you guys as you kind of continue to kind of go down the highway, if you will, with that analogy. Yep.
And also to understand this guy, his mission is pure. And you know, it really is amazing that there's no ulterior motive to trying to bring information on how to do this better for your family, better for your health. You know, I think it's really important that we support a guy like Chris, cause you know, he puts a lot of heart and soul into this. So make sure you check out that website. It actually is unbelievable. He's got a calculator on there for inputs. If you want to run his system with natural farming, he has it there for you. He sells the inputs, but he also shows you exactly how to make it. He's just the kind of guy that speaks to this show, because this show is exactly modeled off of that mentality. We're here to share this information, and it truly is a privilege to have a guy like that on, mucking it up and being able to share this stuff. So great stuff. Do you want to run through a few more questions, or should we?
Good. I can stay around.
You got to run, Ryan.
Well, no, we ran through the questions that I had on there.
Okay.
If people want to kind of add on real quick here, again, I just wanted to point out, man, there's just something that is fun on Friday nights to sit here with you boys, and I I really enjoy it. I just wanted to put that out there. There's something to the free education, and that's what I mean. Like, take this shit and run with it, people. There's something to it.
One thing that I noticed him talk about was FAA. He said that often. And I think that's one thing that I don't use a lot. I have it, but it's just so, it takes so long to make. Not a lot of people do make it, but that just stuck in my mind that he seems to apply that a lot. So I think I might have to add a little bit more of that. But yeah, just the gold nuggets like that, guys. Go back and listen, because you didn't get everything. I didn't either. Go back and listen to the show again. Put it on fast play and you'll be able to hear it twice in a day, something like that. But go pick the gold nuggets that are going to change your life. You don't need to do everything that we talked about tonight. You're probably not going to be able to, but that IPMO, what an exciting subject to try to start to learn. Like, one of the questions was, can I find fuzzy bugs on the windowsill? Yes, you heard him. He didn't put that down. He's like, that's a great idea. Yes, try that stuff out. And that's the fun thing about organics is it's an open book. It's an open slate. There are so many chapters still to be written, and you might be a part of that if you just experiment with these things. And as for me, these are the things that help keep me mentally healthy. They help me give me something to do and to focus and to love on, you know. So go back and listen to the show again. You're going to pick up a lot.
And before I forget, because I did this, I'm now notorious for offering giveaways and not giving them out, because this did happen. I don't know if anybody else picked up on it a few weeks ago, but I did do that. And so this week, and I apologize to everybody, that was not intentional. We just like literally signed off, like, oh, great show. And then I'm walking upstairs to go to bed and realized that we just completely neglected that. So before I forget that, I do want to award 3 prizes. And the prizes are either a biodiversity pack, or your choice of exotic springtails that you can add to your living soil or your bioactive. So after the show, if you won, shoot us a DM, or an email, mark@mibeneficials.com, and we'll make sure to get those out to you guys heading your way Monday. So we each picked a question, and, the question I want to give it to is Grapinator for the fuzzy fly. And it's kind of a tight one, because I know that Lisa McCarville brought up IPMO. So Lisa, if you're feeling slighted, shoot me an email too, and I'll send you one as well. Because when you brought that up, I went and brushed up on IPO.
She's very slighted.
Be slighted, please. Be slighted.
Well, and the reason I think you deserve one is because when I saw your question on Instagram, I went and watched that Matt Powers interview with him again, and it really blew my mind hearing about this IPMO in that context. So both of you can take it, and then Brian and Kevin each picked one. Kev, who did you pick?
Yellow Skunk, his question. I can't even remember what you asked now, Yellow Skunk, but I picked yours. What was it? Dang it. Just went out of my head. Anyway,
the best type of rice.
The rice. That's a good question, because I always wanted those things too. So yeah, very good question. But I was going to ask him about, we didn't get to it, but Dr. Elaine Ingen did some studies on putting oats in a hole out in the forest and trying to see how well that was collected. And he discussed that on a podcast one time. But there's lots of things. Like, if you watch tomatoes sit there in your compost, you see the fuzz grow on it that grows on the rice. So there's just lots of things, lots of possibilities out there to experiment with.
And Brian, who was your win? We'll do a 4-for.
Yeah, Mark Nelson. I liked it, the way his mind was working. He was talking about adding insect frass to labs. I was doing that, especially in the early days before a lot of this information was out there. I was doing it with kefir to this day. That's why I drink that. My whole family drinks it. My daughter is obsessed with it because of the fermentation. And so if you start to sprinkle that around your plants and then put the avocado tech, where you you usually eat the avocado, hopefully, and then you take the shell and you kind of put it down into the soil system. If you actually will use that avocado tech, level 2 is putting the kefir down, letting it harden around the main stalk, and then putting, I usually like to do between 2 and 4, depending on how thriving it is, of the avocado shells, you'll see all kinds of stuff take off. And so I don't know if it's necessarily labs is too strong, but kefir from the store, as long as you get it unflavored, I like to get the high fat one. There's like a 1% and a 3%. I buy the 3%. There's something about fats and proteins in the soil world. Calcium, of course, coming from the kefir. So just wanted to highlight all that, because if he's thinking that same way, just wanted to point out to you, sir, that you are on a, in my opinion, the right track. And that is part of the reason why I find success doing what I'm doing. Calcium is king, whatever you're doing. Proteins are king, because it's hard to find in a soil system unless it's already thriving.
Gold bar. So, yeah, great conversation with Chris, guys. Before we sign off, what do you guys have going on this week? I know Kevin's got your immersive coming up here real soon. You're probably busy as can be.
Dude, I have been so busy for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, because my harvest happened. I've been getting seeds out of plants. My plants just got washed today. I'm going to go off on this Cherry on a Grande Peach Pistols, y'all. Y'all that are coming to the Autumn Immersive are going to get to taste this. Guys, Warren at Scissortail Sauvillus, he's like, dude, this has one of the most unique terps I've ever had before. He's a processor, y'all. So Cherry on a Grande is known for a hard, hard, loud, fruity terp. And it's just like noticeable. You go back and hit it again. Anyway, I've been making tons of inputs for the Mushroom Festival coming up on October 12th in Oklahoma City. I'll be speaking at that one. It's called Let There Be Soil, Mindset and Methods of Soil Making. I'm just going to show people how to make an easy soil and how to be thankful and how to be mentally healthy when you do it, how to benefit from what you're actually doing, right? Actually have some mental benefit from the physical labor you do. But then I'll have, and at that show, I'm going to have interactive totes. I'll have a tote of compost, a tote of IMO 3, 4, 5, Bokashi. I'll have a 5-gallon bucket of IMO 1. Just people can see, they can look at it, touch, they can take 5-gallon paper paper bag sacks out of it and take it home with them. But it's just to let everybody see and get an introduction to what soil is like. Because at this mushroom festival that last year, people would come by and they thought they could grow mushrooms in this stuff. And it was like, no, this is just a whole different side. It's like gardening more. So this year, they're going to kind of understand a little bit more that I'm making soil. It's not for mushrooms to grow in, because, of course, that's the theme of the festival. But this year, they're trying to get people to understand there's more to growing mushrooms. There's more to growing cannabis. There's gardening. There's growing your own food. There's creating a homestead. There's creating no-till spots. You know, there's all of that stuff that can be done. And then the very next week, guys, October 19th is the Autumn Immersive. Me and Jordan from GrowCast, I'll be teaching hands-on how to make inputs, how to forage inputs, how to process them down. I'm going to show you how to make stuff. More importantly, guys, you're going to take home the most amazing goodie bag you will ever take home from any kind of class like this. I'll have to beat it next year, and I don't know how I'm going to do it. So remember, I just had my harvest of all of my seeds, man. I got FIMS, I got regs. I've been making tons of IMO3, tons of Bokashi. Everybody gets EM5 labs, and the list goes on. Fermented plant, horsetail, fermented plant extract. Got that going on right now. But you're gonna come. You're gonna spend your money coming and hanging out for the day. Some of y'all are coming the night before. We'll hang out then. But you will take home a package that is very valuable. You're going to have great inputs. You're going to have great genetics, not just from me, but Jordan's going to be bringing a whole side of his goodies that he's going to give you. But it's going to be a great time, guys. I'm going to get to talk the whole day. It's going to be awesome for me, for sure.
Well, bless doing this podcast every Friday, because you'll be so polished compared to like when you would just kind of do that off the dome the first couple of times. It's rough. Oh,
dude, it totally helps chatting through it often like this. Yeah.
I remember, man, I'm sure you've already felt this, but people say like what public speaking is like one of the biggest fears of people. And I think the reality of that is because you've never experienced, you've been in a room, everyone's talking, but you've never been in a room where everyone shuts the fuck up and everyone is staring at you. And it's a weird feeling when you've never felt that before. And so even though you don't necessarily, you know, have everybody in front of you, you're still used to speaking live, where if you mess up, say something stupid, it's out there forever, which is basically what public speaking is. And you're already polished, man. So I just wanted to put it out there that people are going to be able to listen to you articulate things that I think in the early days, it was a lot harder for us even in 2019, trying to understand all of the vernacular that Chris was just spitting, because you'd be sitting there trying to write stuff down. I got to go back and figure this out. Now it almost seems secondhand, but you know, that takes time.
Yep. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Hey, as a question, is Jordan going to be there finding keepers? Yes, Jordan is going to be there the whole time. And then another, my Blaze Cherries looks the best, but Grape Gushers Peach Pistol smells the best. Guys, I'm about to put on my website, okcalicshot.com, I'm about to have a whole new genetics list. I've gone almost 2 years of not updating and just growing out new genetics. And, man, we have found some amazing terped out washers, because that's what the last run or the last breeding project was all about, washing, so that at Scissortail Solventless we could really come across some great hash rosin. But in probably about a week, guys, I'm gonna have a whole new genetics list up. I'll have new packages and bundles of all kinds of stuff going on, so keep checking okcalicshop.com. It'll be up soon.
Bry guy, what you got going, brother?
I got a bunch of shows starting to come up in October. A lot of things, you know, to prep for and that kind of thing. And again, just behind the scenes, just thankful for everybody that's supporting the online stuff. It's overwhelming. And I'm just so grateful for that, because it used to go from shipping every Tuesdays, and now it's Monday through Thursday. So there's quite a difference in that. And I'm grateful for kind of where everything is going, man. I hope that you guys see that. The bioactive, from my stance, when I go to these expos, it's like a little wave, man. And then there's like another little wave and then another little wave. So I couldn't tell you if it's going to take another year, another 3 years, another 5 years. But I can tell you that when I was in 2019 learning about living soil, where I felt like maybe one of the earliest ones in that sense in the reptile space, I'm saying the same stuff that I saw, these little ripples, except now the reptile space is small enough for everybody to save up their nickels and dimes and be able to self-fund a little venture for yourself. And that's why I screamed this from the mountaintops, because I was extremely afraid of how I was going to take care of my family in 2020. And I'm sure most people felt that way. So then also finding financial independence on your own, and then realizing that an e-commerce store is basically just hustling. You're just trying to get more people to find out about your brand. And it's easier said than done, but I think that's a lot easier, obviously, than what we used to call having to do the Pepto-Bismol, baby. When you meet up with strangers in a hotel room and you have no idea if this dude's going to jack you or not, e-commerce just looks a lot prettier. What do you got, Mark?
That's a real good point, Brian. And being on your own schedule, to me, is, and being having time for your kids. I mean, I know it's easier said than done, because the more you put into it, the more you want to keep putting into it, the better you do, the more time you want to put into it, because you love this thing. But it does afford you that flexibility. So it's a great point. But on my side, I got a new swag drop. I got the Springtail hoodie. My Beneficials is on the pouch, but there's only 20 of these, and then I got 20 new MI Beneficials.
I'm buying one. Put me down for one.
Get on it.
Yeah. And then I got 20 of the Friends with Benefits sweatshirts coming down the pipe too. So those will be on the site. Appreciate all the support on MIBeneficials.com. And then real quick, a little housekeeping, because we got some really cool shit coming up here in the next few weeks. Next week, we've got Quatamuck Via at Bokashi for you on Instagram. And this is a guy that has been using Bokashi in special ways of preparing Bokashi and remediating land on a large scale, and not just land of any contaminants, petrocontaminants and stuff like that, with lab work to back it up. So that's been his work over the past years, and I'm really excited to talk to him about that, and paramagnetic biochar, whatever that is. I can't wait to learn about it, because it has a lot to do with bioremediation.
I have no idea what that is.
So I'm stoked for that one, because we are going to be learning a lot next week. And then
that's like more like Rudolf Steiner, I think, for people that are maybe like, I was trying to think of the, what's the actual name? When you put the horn in the,
in the
biodynamics.
Biodynamic farming, yeah. I think that's more of where that's coming from, and more of a metaphysical sense as well.
Yep. And then the week after that, October 11th, we have Organic Alexa coming back on to get her scope on, to look at stuff under the soil again. And hopefully we can get some kind of either some more basic questions to follow up from last time, if people want to slow down on that, or some more complex stuff. Let's get into specific organisms and talk about it a little bit. That's going to be awesome. The week after that, we've got the man Matt Powers coming on. Not exactly sure what we're going to talk with him about yet, but it is going to be an amazing hour, and equally as valuable as this last hour, I'm sure.
He's lively.
I love his passion. His passion makes me want to go run and join a permaculture band. You know what I mean? And then the following week after that, we've got Matthew Gates at Sync Angel on Instagram. He's coming on to talk about IPM, and he is an entomologist and scientist who works in cannabis. So he's going to be able to talk on pretty much anything we want to talk about when it comes to pests and pathogens. So that's going to be really cool. Got some awesome stuff coming, guys. Really appreciate everyone's support on the show. And we'll see you guys here next week, Friday, 9 p.m. As always, keep it bioactive. Stay regenerative. Have a good night, everyone.
Yeah.